What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, June 26th, 2019. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the rogue one, Gary Whitta.
Good morning.
Here we go. So this is how it is. You got a taste of being an influencer on Twitch, and now you're wearing a shirt that just says twitch.tv/Gary Whitta. That's how it's going to be now.
My wife made me this t-shirt this morning. She has a heat press at home, and she sells things like on her little Etsy store.
Sure.
And I joked about doing it. A bunch of people, I did a Twitch stream.
Yeah.
And a bunch of people said, to promote your stream, you should promote it on Kinda Funny. I said, I absolutely would give it a shout out.
Sure.
But then somebody said, you should have a really obnoxious t-shirt made. And I went, I should actually do that. Because I know that you're a good sport for this sort of thing.
Anybody knows about self-promotion, it's Greg Miller.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And I was thinking you would appreciate more than anyone else. Like, you've got to make moves.
Yeah.
Right? You've got to be making moves.
You got to. Make money moves.
I feel I had this thought earlier. You could put this on a motivational poster. Get ready. You ready?
I was.
Because if you're not making moves.
Yeah, give him the one.
If you're not making moves. Which camera am I on? Which one is it?
One, the one on the right one, here? Yeah.
If you're not making moves, you're standing still. That's my little piece of motivational.
You're Mr. Moves. You know what I mean? You took one video game journalism, you left it behind. You went over there, you won making movies, you leave it behind. Now you're taking the Twitch world by storm.
So I decided to get into. I mean, I'm not going to hijack the whole show, but real quick, I decided to get into Twitch streaming because all the cool kids are doing it.
You used to do it. You used to do PUBG.
I used to play PUBG on stream about a year or two ago, and I only got a few people watching because nobody really wants me to play PUBG. But there's a whole category of Twitch now, which is just talking heads, people just chatting and doing their own talk shows and podcasts just like this.
Yeah,
not as good as this obviously, but there's a lot of people out there doing it.
Yeah,
and I thought I could do that. I mean, I do it every week with you. I come
it
here
seemed like you were warming up and testing it out because you're going to do now the Book of Eli is on Netflix.
So that's actually what precipitated. Yeah,
sure.
So what happened was, after 9 years, finally, it's always been a bit of a frustration to me that the Book of Eli, the first movie I wrote, and a movie I'm very proud of, has never been on Netflix in the USA. It's been on in Canada, the UK, and other territories, but never here in the US. And I always wondered why. I never got a straight answer. And then finally, you know how they always announce, here's what's coming to Netflix next month. It's in the July drop. It's coming out on July 1st next week.
Yeah.
And so I thought, that's really cool. What can I do to mark the occasion? And I thought, maybe I could try and do something new. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a Twitch stream. You can go to my channel.
Twitch.tv.
Twitch.tv/GaryWhitta.
Yeah.
Or you can follow me on Twitter and I'll provide information about when the thing's going to happen.
Yeah.
And what I'm going to do is I can't actually stream the movie because, copyright stuff.
You do the 3-2-1 press play.
Yeah, yeah. But you'll have the movie, say you're watching it, you'll have it queued up in another browser window or on your Apple TV or whatever, and the stream will be like a companion to it.
Yeah.
And we'll go 3-2-1, everyone press play, and it'll all sync up and I'll have a timer running. And I'm going to actually have a copy of the screenplay up on the screen as well.
Oh, wow.
And I'll kind of page through the script as the movie progresses, so you can kind of
really
see
cool.
The script screen comparison. I don't think anyone's ever done this before. It'll be like a live commentary track Q&A, and I'll answer questions, and it'll be fun. So if you've seen the movie before or haven't seen it before, there was never a commentary track on any edition of the Blu-ray or the DVD. There were special features, but never a commentary.
Awesome.
So this will be the first time there is one, and it'll have a live interactive aspect. But in building up to that, I've been trying to build the channel a little bit. I've been messing around with my streaming setup, messing around with cameras and stuff like that.
You look like a young millennial influencer. I looked at the stream today. Your wife showed me a clip of your dog coming in peeing behind you.
You'd think I was what, 20, 21 years old?
You got these purple backlights.
I've got the cool the Twitch lights. Yeah. I've got it all set up. I've got all the bells, technical bells and whistles. I've got a stream deck where I can play sound effects and stuff. It's brilliant. I'm actually really enjoying it.
That's awesome.
I enjoy doing this with you, but I didn't know if I would enjoy what this involves. Which is just sitting alone in a room talking to a camera and imagining that you're having a real conversation. You've got the chat.
Of course.
I'm not telling you that you don't know.
Yeah, I've used Twitch once before.
But could I don't know, would I actually be comfortable doing that? And I actually found out to my surprise that I'm quite comfortable doing that. So I've actually been streaming quite regularly over the last few nights on my channel. And the aim is to become a Twitch partner.
Gotcha.
And if you hit certain metrics, if you stream
you're
a certain number of hours,
you need that money.
And get every little helps, right? Maybe I'll quit my job. Maybe this is my third act. Look, This is your job. I conquered the world of video games,
yeah,
Greg.
Yeah, yeah.
I conquered Hollywood. Now it's time for the final frontier to conquer the internet, conquer cyberspace. Twitch, can we get a shot of this T-shirt, Greg? My wife worked. Kevin.
Yeah, sorry. We don't have a stream deck for you.
This is where you go. This is your portal into a new world of fascination and multimedia entertainment. On the cutting edge, twitch.tv/GaryWhitta. We're going to be streaming. We're going to be talking about stuff. It's going to be fun. I don't know what the future holds, but I'm really, really enjoying doing it. I hope you'll come join me. And let's go on this adventure together.
I have it on good authority that Kevin, there you go. I have it on good authority that you are inspiring other senior citizens to come out and stream because Bernie Sanders just joined Twitch as well.
Did he join Twitch?
He just started.
Oh, good for Bernie. That's fantastic.
But enough about that. This is kind of funny games.
That was a good burn, by the way. I've got to give him credit for that.
This is kind of funny games daily, each and every week, down a variety of platforms. We run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show. You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Ask us questions, leave comments, do all sorts of cool things. Then watch us record the show live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you're watching live, you have a special job. Go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, and listening on podcast services around the globe. Housekeeping for you. As I've said many a time, this will be the last time I'll say it for right now. Maybe I'll say it tomorrow. Who knows? Kind of Funny Prom, 1 year later. The video is going up this weekend, June 30th. Tim's birthday, 1 year later. Come see what Kind of Funny Prom is all about.
What did it take a whole year to put that video up?
We wanted people to come to prom, and then also it's just never, you've seen how busy it is here, right?
Oh, so you said, like, you better come to prom because, like, this won't be available online for a long time.
Sure,
basically.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah, that's cool. And so it's cool. It's a cool anniversary gift, right, to put
now,
in.
Now, when Tim hits 30 this weekend, does that mean that he's no longer 30 under 30? Does that go away?
I mean, he still has the award forever,
right?
But I think it does sound weird.
But it's no longer current.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's not how that works, though.
Thank you to our Patreon producers, Daniel Massey, Blackjack, Colton Yoder, and Mohammed. Today we're brought to you by Third Love and Experian, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. Five items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
Wow, that was a new one, Kevin. I like it. I appreciate you exploring your craft over there.
I got to say,
are you streaming yourself at night doing different versions of that to try to get ready for this?
No, but I am doing. What do you think about this? There you go.
What are you showing me? Oh, look at that. I like that. Yeah, get it up there the whole time. Can I move the mic over a little bit so we get an unobscured shot?
Sure.
And the thing is, the people that are watching the stream right now live, they're already on Twitch.
Yeah, they can.
So I literally
easy to
could
click
not
the
be making
button.
This any easier for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Just tab over.
I'm sure. Oh, my God. Number one. We're starting over at GameDaily.biz, where Mike Futter has an interview with EA CEO Andrew Wilson. Again, a very interesting interview. Not required reading. We have a giant required reading from Jason Schreier to talk about later. This one, however, I'm going to pull the Anthem stuff out and read a little bit about that. So I'm jumping midway into this interview in Mike's reporting. This is Andrew Wilson, likened BioWare's pedigree to Steven Spielberg's. Spielberg might not have hit a home run with Ready Player One, but you'd be a fool not to bet on the Indiana Jones director's next movie. Likewise, Wilson said he'd bet on BioWare every day and twice on Sunday. Despite Edmonton's stumbles with Anthem and now closed BioWare Montreal's challenges with Mass Effect Andromeda. Quote, if we believed that at the very core the world wasn't compelling for people, if we believed at the very core that the characters weren't compelling for people, or the javelin suits weren't compelling, or traversing the world and participating in the world wasn't compelling, then provided we hadn't made promises to our players, we might not invest further, Wilson said. IP lives for generations and runs in these 7 to 10 year cycles. So, if I think about Anthem on a 7 to 10 year cycle, it may not have had the start that many of us wanted, including our players. I feel like this team is really going to get there with something special and something great because they've demonstrated that they can, end quote. And in the case of Anthem's misalignment with player expectations, the only way forward in Wilson's eyes is to remain committed to the game and its audience. That includes those players who came in looking for more traditional BioWare experience. And at the same time, he's cognizant that all of EA's brands need to grow and adapt as the market and the players mature. BioWare is just the latest to push boundaries, and Wilson sees them as being around for years to come. Quote, What the BioWare teams are thinking about is that they're going to build a lot of different types of games, Wilson explained. We're going to have our core BioWare audience that's been with us a really long time. There are these kids today who are 12 years old who weren't around when BioWare started making games, and they have different expectations of what BioWare games should be in the context of the world they grew up in. As a result of that, BioWare has to evolve and has to expand and has to test the elasticity around the brand. The teams at BioWare will continue to come to work every day and listen to their players, old and new, and seek to deliver on the promises they've made to those players. And that's what you're seeing with Anthem today. Gary Whitta, do you believe EA is committed to Anthem for 7 to 10 years?
It's a question I've been thinking about recently. I actually asked Jason Schreier this on Twitter the other day.
Did he respond to Anthem?
Yeah, I mean, usually he just blanks me, you know, because who am I? But no, Jason's always nice, and I talk to him on Twitter. He was writing something about Anthem, and it's something I've been thinking about. I said, do you think there's any possibility at all that at some point in the near future, EA just cuts it loose and says, look, this isn't working. We're throwing good money after bad. Let's cut our losses.
Yeah.
And Jason was very emphatic in saying that would absolutely not happen. They've got too much invested in it. I think also because it would look like a big...
What a huge failure.
Huge humiliation. Huge public embarrassment. They have to, even if it ends up costing them a lot of money, they have to kind of just through force of will and throwing money at it, they have to get to a point where there's some... redemption in the narrative, right? Yeah. Like with Destiny, like with No Man's Sky, they got there in the end. What's funny to me, and it's a little bit upsetting, is, you know, it used to be develop, release the game. That's the big moment, and then maybe there's a couple of patches after the fact. Now, when you think about it, in these live service games, the launch of the game has really just become like just another milestone in the game's development. Like the public launch of the game is a thing that happens while the game is still actively being developed. Anthem was clearly, and many other games like it, you know, Fallout 76, we've seen this so many times in the news
recently. The list goes on.
Many games were clearly released at a point where they were obviously not ready to be released, and it was a kind of an insult to ask players to pay $60 for that game, which is why we saw Anthem and Fallout 76 very quickly get discounted, because people are like, $60 for this? Like, you've got to be kidding me.
Sure.
So I mean, that's just the world we live in now. I don't know if there's anything we can do about that. But it's a bit sad. The idea is, oh, they'll get there eventually. It's like, I feel like, and we just kind of go, yeah, that's just how it is now. Like, don't you think, are our expectations slipping a little bit? Like, this 100%. Is just the world we live in now. We think it's okay.
I think it's what we've talked about on this show before, in the way, and I think it was with you last week a little bit of this, where we talk about we're doing it day to day, so it seems like these stories keep happening, when you, in reality, you pull back and you get the giant timeline, you see swerves, right?
Right.
I think The Division 2 and how they launched and how they were like, here's the year free content and here's what it is, and it's a game packed with content, da 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 da, is a direct reaction to what they learned with Division 1, let alone what's going on in the industry. And you hope that isn't the exception to the rule going forward, that is the new norm.
Yeah.
That these games are coming out being like, cool, games as a service were new to us. We weren't 100% sure. And this is the industry talking. We understand what that means now. We understand how to launch them. Here's a complete package. Like, you know, Fallout 76 in Anthem, you would hope would be the last of that kind. I'm sure they won't be the last games to do this. And again, maybe I'm with rose-tinted glasses, hoping... where this is the industry change in the same way we saw every game stepping on the rake in the front lawn when it came to loot boxes a while back, right? Or I'm sorry, surprise mechanics.
Surprise mechanics, don't forget.
Yeah. You see it, everybody screwing and fucking that up. You'd hope that you get here and they've seen these games fuck it up that way. They understand how to launch and not be that way. But it all remains to be seen. You know what I mean? In the same way, you know, Tim and I had a conversation of like, we need to stop believing in the good of people. I default to everybody's a good
Tim
person.
Tim said that?
Yeah, to me, because I try to believe in the best of everybody, right. And it keeps fucking me over. Right. That we got to stop. I have to stop believing in that every company's going to learn from the other company's mistakes. But right. You hope, and you look at what we've done even with Games Daily and the stories we've gone through, that you do see changes. You know what I mean? We did see, you know, E3 this year was, and everything's going to be free. All the updates are going to be free. We don't want to shatter the player base. That is a direct reaction to the blowback that all these companies and the industry got for having loot boxes, for, you know, segregating the communities, breaking everybody up, doing these different things, right? If you, Gary Whitta, if you can will cross-platform play into a Call of Duty game, like, I don't think there's any, like, I think, sit, I, do we have to sit there and accept this is the norm? No, but you take your lumps when they're happening, because at that point, you can't turn the ship around.
You know what I think is missing from this Andrew Wilson
What's
statement?
That?
Is any hint of an apology. Don't you think it would be nice, and don't you think players who bought that game at $60 in good faith and had a really terrible experience and did not get what was advertised, frankly, over and over again, that, you know, I think Todd Howard came kind of close to this at E3 when he was talking about the changes being made to Fallout 76.
But to be clear, that was one of those things where I said it in our thing where I was like, oh, look at that. And it was when the post show, I think maybe Tim or me had it. And it was like, and then they came out and, you know, apologized for the way Fallout 76 launched. And the chat was very clear of like, well, technically, no. There was no I'm sorry.
No,
there was.
And let me tell you something. At this level, at the Todd Howard, Andrew Wilson level, every word that they say in a statement like this or on a stage at E3 is very, very carefully scripted, and it's gotten consultants and people look at it. It's just like a presidential speech or something. It goes through draft after draft after draft, and every phrase and word is picked apart for maximum effectiveness, and you don't want this to be misinterpreted or whatever. Like, we've got to put forward like the best message that we can. And one of the things that like those kind of people, like PR and like crisis management people, will tell you is never apologize.
Because never admit wrongdoing.
Like, say, we understand your concerns. And that's how we end up with these fucking mealy-mouthed pablum statements. The stuff that doesn't really matter. Just a bunch of word salad. How many times did he use the word compelling in one sentence? One, two, three, five times in one sentence? Like, this isn't proper English, and it's certainly not anything amounting to an apology. I think Anthem, let's talk about Anthem for just one moment, because that's what he's talking about.
Here's what I want to throw out. Well, you want to
I don't think it's unreasonable to say that Anthem players, people who bought that game, deserve just a straight up apology. But they'll never get it because EA will never do it.
I googled Anthem apology, right? And the first thing, I have a comicbook.com article here from Lily Rupert, and this is March 14th, 2019. BioWare offers heartfelt message and apology to Anthem players. Anthem is here to stay. So the question, and like, again, you and me.
Well, the headline says it's an apology, but what does the actual statement say? Is the word sorry or apology in there or anything?
She wrote so much here. Hold on.
I don't want to slow the stream.
Who cares? That's what the show's all about. You can just keep promoting your Twitch stream.
Yeah, don't forget, especially if you're listening on the audio podcast and don't have the benefit of seeing my t-shirt, twitch.tv/GaryWhitta, GaryWhitta. Come for the kind of funny vibes, but stay for I don't know what. We haven't figured out yet what you'll be staying for, but we'll work it out as we go.
The dog peeing.
Yeah, the dog. So last night on the stream, a dog pissed on my rug, and people in the chat found that hilarious. So like, don't tell me that we're not providing high flying comedy on the Gary Whitta Twitch channel, because we're absolutely full of it. I told a very nice anecdote about you last night that people appreciated.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Somebody tried to yell at me that I wasn't in the stream on Monday night. I was like, dude, I was on a plane flying home. I don't know what you want me to do.
You should drop into the chat sometime, though. Next time you see me streaming, drop in.
Sure. Okay.
Bring some of your star power to the, some of your wattage.
I always like to help the smaller
Your industrial wattage, your star power to the stream would be much appreciated.
The thing is, like, so this one is a community manager on Reddit. Not CEO of the company.
Right.
Yeah.
And I bet you if he did apologize, he probably got bollocks for it. Like, don't go around apologizing. We don't do that here. That's not the message we want to put out.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's disgraceful.
You're wrong, by the way. kindoffunny.com/you're wrong if you can find an apology where they did say, hey, we're sorry for what's going on here.
Or really for a time that any major game developer, like a big game developer, like an EA, Activision, or Ubisoft, ever like actually apologized and said, we're really sorry for this. I think sometimes when it's like something really, really bad, like some racist meme or something shows up in a game or something.
Yeah, no, that's usually,
But for something like that, the game was just flat out not good enough. It absolutely warrants an apology. I think players deserve it, but you'll never get it because it's not part of the carefully crafted PR message that is a big part of how these Andrew Wilson statements happen at the top level.
Well, right, because if you do that then, right, you open yourself up to, hey, I can get a refund then, right?
Like, all kinds of
exactly.
Things.
If we're sorry,
potential legal action, all kinds of things.
Sure, yeah.
So they have to be very careful in what they say.
Yeah, maybe if everybody just prompt pinky swore not to sue, then they could just apologize. Yeah,
right. But I guess the good news for Anthem players is they are saying here again. EA will say one thing today and do another thing.
That's my thing with it. 100% is that I totally believe that right now the BioWare team is committed to fixing Anthem and doing the things that people want, and they understand. They're looking at it and they're changing and they're going to do. And I believe that there is a team and whiteboards and a plan.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily trust EA. It's not even EA. It's when you're owned by a giant corporation. You've been owned by a giant corporation, working places that are owned by giant corporations, and they can say, this is the path. And when the path doesn't work in 9 months, they're like, guess what, everybody? We're laying all those people off.
You know what
it
reminds me
of?
This is a bit of a non sequitur, but what it reminds me of is, like, you know, obviously, as you know, I follow English football, the English Premier League. And one of the famous kind of memes in football is like when a manager, when the head coach of the team is thought to be in trouble because they've had like a string of poor results or whatever, people start speculating, oh, is the manager going to lose his job? There's always like a supportive message that comes out from like the club's board of directors. We fully support the manager. We're in this for the long term.
And then
literally the next day he's sacked.
The season's over. Gone. See you later. No, 100%.
Like that letter of support from the board is like become known as like the kiss of death. Like once you get the board's full support, that's it. You're dead.
It's just like everything else we talk about is the proof will be in the pudding. Like Andrew Wilson is saying the right things here. And I don't like painting with the broad brush of, well, everybody at EA is a horrible person and blah, blah, blah. Like maybe this is the truth. Maybe they are on a 7 to 10 year and we're going to be here in 2 years going, man, they really turned Anthem around and they were committed and that's great.
And I would
just
love
prove it.
I know it seems like I stick the boot into Anthem a lot because I do think it was disgraceful what they thought was fit to release. But I really do honestly hope that it gets there. I think, you know, it could be a great game. I still have a lot of faith in BioWare as a developer. I want the gamers who paid money for the game to finally get what they fucking thought they were getting in the first place.
Yeah.
So let's hope so. Let's hope EA does the right thing.
Number two on the Roper Report, Dr. Disrespect's Twitch channel is back. This is from Vice, Nicole Carpenter. Hugely popular Twitch streamer Guy Beam, known on the platform as Dr. Disrespect, was recently banned from Twitch and had his E3 badge revoked after he broadcasted live from a public bathroom at the games industry convention. The ban was implemented on June 11th. Just 2 weeks later, Dr. Disrespect is back on Twitch. Dr. Disrespect's account, I'm just calling him Doc from here on out, returned to Twitch late on Tuesday night, but the stream remained offline. Fans noticed immediately and began flooding the chat with emotes and subscription notices, despite the stream being offline. The chat has remained active throughout the night and into the morning, though Doc has yet to make an appearance. Doc hasn't tweeted about returning to Twitch, but the streamer has retweeted multiple fans in the last 15 hours expressing excitement about the suspension ending. Doc did not immediately respond to Vice's request for comment. Streaming from a public bathroom in Los Angeles appears to have created hype for the streamer, despite its likely being a violation of California's privacy laws, if the still active Twitch chat is any indication. In the lead up to his return, Doc made posts that could be interpreted as ginning up excitement. On June 21st, Doc tweeted a 30-second video of his head bobbing around all of the DVD video screensaver. Days later, on June 24th, he posted an image of renovations for an imaginary Champions Club, which is the designation for Doc's Twitch subscribers. The image appears to be a nod to the bathroom incident. It's set in a locker room with a sign on the wall that prohibits photography and filming beyond a certain point. The hype echoes Doc's return to Twitch after taking time off in 2017. Doc left Twitch for a short period after stating on camera that he cheated on his wife. He returned after almost 2 months and hit around 389,000 concurrent viewers, breaking a record at the time. Twitch doesn't outline in detail how it determines suspension or ban lengths for violations against its terms of service. Breaking the law is against Twitch's TOS, and the unauthorized sharing of private information is too. Specifically, this means that, quote, sharing content that violates another's reasonable expectation of privacy, for example, streaming in a private space without permission, is against the rules. Presumably, this would make streaming random people's trips to the bathroom a violation of Twitch's policies. A large-scale return to Twitch after a violation of this kind sets a disturbing precedent about what's acceptable on the platform, which has been criticized for inconsistent enforcement of its rules. In December, a Fortnite streamer was arrested and banned for assaulting his girlfriend on stream. The streamer, Luke Dr. Dead Moth Mundy, had his stream reinstated after 2 weeks before it went offline again later in the week. Twitch spokespeople were not immediately available to respond for Vice's request for comment. Gary, you're a Twitch superstar now.
As a pillar of the Twitch community,
sure, yes.
Allow me to opine on this issue. I'm actually glad about it. I woke up this morning and I checked my tweets, my news stories, as you do, and this was one of the first stories that I saw, and it really made me rage. And I've never been more happy about it being a Wednesday, because I needed an outlet for my rage.
You're ready to come in for it.
If I'd have seen this any other day, I wish it was Wednesday so I could go in and rage, and it is, so I'm going to.
You understand.
That Barrett's taken up a seat by the hot mic as well, because I know he tweeted about this earlier. Yeah. I know that he's got some thoughts on it as well. Barrett, why don't you start?
This is just one of those things that makes it frustrates the hell out of me. Like, yes, Twitch is allowed to choose what they do with their platform and how they punish people, but the fact that this is the act that he did was breaking the law of it, invading people's privacy in public.
Children.
And because of a child being involved, he should either be in prison for a year or pay the fine or whatever the fine cost is. And I don't see or hear anything about him being charged with anything. And instead of that happening, he is being rewarded by being given back his platform. And it's I think it's a dumb move. I don't know. It's
let me ask you this. What do you think would have been the appropriate way for Twitch to handle it?
I don't know, this is just something weird to me that, it's just a slap on the wrist, you know, of like, we're just going to take your channel away for 2 weeks and then...
Which is nothing, really.
Yeah.
It's a vacation.
Exactly.
Not to mention to what they point out from his last 2 weeks or 2 months off,
yeah,
right? Like, it actually builds hype for
and
his
And that's
family.
The thing. He will now make so much hay out of his triumphant return to Twitch that whatever income he may have lost over the like, he'll come back from... This is actually... I think he probably saw this coming all along. I'll get my slap on the wrist. I'll take my 2 week back to my 2 week ban,
yeah,
and I'll come back bigger and stronger and more controversial and more subversive than ever before.
Yeah, because he was quote unquote punished, like, probably his fan base will grow because
yeah, it feeds into like the whole like, I'm the bad boy wronged. Of Twitch, right? Like that's the whole
he
bullshit
was the
persona.
Bad boy, and also he was wronged, and like now he gets to come out of this punishment that like. I see some people saying, like, he didn't deserve, which I think is even more fucking ridiculous.
I'm a little unclear. Was, like, someone using the bathroom? Was
oh, yeah, there was a bunch of people in there, including children.
A bathroom
it was
E3.
A bathroom at E3. Yeah. It was filled with people.
Yeah.
Including kids taking a piss.
Yeah.
And he went in there with a live stream camera crew.
Yeah.
And he knew exactly what he was doing. He did that because he knew that he was crossing a line, that he knew it would be outrageous, that he knew it would create controversy. And he also knew that he would get away with it, that Twitch, because he makes Twitch so much money, he would face no real consequences. And now this just makes it easier for the next douchebag to come along and do the same thing, because Twitch is just saying there are no real consequences.
Well, the thing you get into is, are there consequences for in terms of what strata you're in? Dr. Disrespect, right. One of the biggest Twitch streamers, yeah. Right? So he does this 2-week slap on the wrist and he's back. It's more of a slippery slope of then, yeah, I stream to 30 people. I'm going to do something stupid like that. I'm permabanned. Don't get me wrong. Darwinism. Get rid of the morons.
This is why we've got it all backwards, Greg.
Sure.
Because you're right. The big streamers like Dr. Disrespect who create a lot of revenue for Twitch. So because he creates a lot of revenue for Twitch, he gets the most lenient treatment. I would argue it should be the other way around. He should get the most severe treatment because
someone needs to make an example.
It doesn't matter how big you are, how much money you make us. If you cross a line, if you broadcast on the internet live images of children in bathrooms, we are going to come down on you like a fucking ton of bricks. That's the example that should have been set. If you ask me, he should have been banned for 6 months or a year. Something that he would fucking feel like, oh shit, I really fucked up. But he doesn't. I'm telling you, he's celebrating this. He's loving every minute of this. And I say this as someone who actually was a really big fan of Dr. Disrespect. When I first started streaming on Twitch a couple of years ago, I started watching because I was playing PUBG.
Funny.
And I was watching other PUBG streamers. And I got to say that I really, really admire what he's done on Twitch. Like, he created this whole persona, this whole kayfabe thing, this whole heel character.
Yeah.
And he doesn't break character. He stays in it. He's got tremendous production values, all these things. By the way, the locker room thing, I don't think is a reference to the bathroom. The locker room thing is a thing that he's had for a long time. Like, that's part of his Champions Club shtick. I really admired the whole character persona that he created, all the production values he put into this. I was really, wow, this guy is like the coolest guy on Twitch. And then some of the unsavory comments like impersonating Chinese people, and it started getting a bit like, oh, do I really want to follow? And I eventually unfollowed him and I forgot about him for a long time. And then this turned up. And I guarantee you the reason why he did this is partly because he knew that this would be the result, because there's no real consequences. A 2-week vacation is nothing for him. Whatever income he loses, he's already like, we just saw it in the article here. Subscriptions flooding in. People want to subscribe to the fucking self-proclaimed bad boy of Twitch. So he will not suffer at all. If anything, he will benefit. I would have banned him for a year. Something that is, I mean, part of the reason why we have justice in this country is as a deterrent to others. You need to make an example of people and say, this guy fucked up. It doesn't matter that he's a big guy. It doesn't matter that he makes us a lot of money. If you fuck around on our platform and do really, really egregious shit like live stream children in bathrooms, we are going to fucking destroy you. And that's what they should have done. A 2-week slap on the wrist is nothing. I think Twitch should be fucking ashamed of themselves.
Yep.
And I'm on Twitch at twitchtv.
You're literally on it right now.
If you want to get content on Twitch that doesn't involve streaming in bathroom, the worst thing you're going to see on my stream is a dog pissing on my rug. That's totally cool. Anyway, I think it's an embarrassment for Twitch and for all concerned.
For me, the root of this, right, is...
I'm really sorry, but you've got me starting now. I didn't even know about this one. This fucking guy beat his girlfriend on stream and go, you can beat your girlfriend on Twitch and get a 2-week ban? What the fuck is going on over there? Who is asleep at the Switch?
I open this back up, right, because it does... streamer Mr. Deadmoth had a stream reinstated after 2 weeks before it went offline again. I went through, clicked on, while we've been talking, opened it back up and got brought to a Kotaku article about the stream going back down, right, where it was up and then got breakdown. The quote there was, neither Twitch nor Monday have stated whether he has been permanently banned or if this is just another temporary suspension. This is that second one. Twitch has a policy against discussing the particulars of these things, and Monday has yet to speak publicly since his channel got put in timeout, nor has he replied to an inquiry from Kotaku. A Twitch spokesperson offered the following statement with regard to the sudden resuspension of Monday's channel. Quote, protecting the integrity of our community is incredibly important to us, they told Kotaku. We want everyone on Twitch to have a safe and positive experience and work consistently towards that goal. Part of that work includes examining our policies and practices when we find they don't properly address specific incidents to ensure we're adapting as the Twitch community grows, end quote. And this, because this headline here is Twitch resuspends alleged domestic abuser after fan outcry. When they're like, why the
fuck
is he
reading?
Yeah,
again, they only do anything when the fans hold their feet to the fire when there's sufficient outrage.
So, exactly. And again, by the way, if you have a more thing, kindoffunny.com/ you're wrong about the Monday situation. If he is permanently banned, I don't know. The Doc thing and suspension
of 2 weeks.
I want
to hear your take on this.
I mean, like, this literally goes back to the last conversation we just had with number one. Tim continues to tell me I need to stop. We need to stop thinking everybody's a good person. If this had happened to me, I do stupid shit all the time. I fuck shit up all the time, right? We once got, you know, an email from Twitch of like, hey, you can't put up that graphic image of the Let's Play logo fucking the Kind of Funny logo again. And we're like, all right, that's a dumb thing. It's not real porn, but it's porn enough. Got it. Sorry. And they were like, cool. And we talk about that and we talk about it like this, right? That to me is what's missing here that I think could have put a different lens on this situation. If there would have been a mustache off, similar to the when he came on the stream about cheating on his wife.
Yeah,
right?
I mean that was a really awkward video to watch. Right, it was the first time right. He appeared on camera outside a character. He seemed he was crying on stream. He got busted cheating on his wife, and kind of took. I think he took himself off Twitch.
For a while.
Right.
If there had been with this situation, hey everybody, let's talk for a second. I'm talking on YouTube, right? His channel's gone on Instagram, Twitter, whatever.
Right.
Hey everybody, I fucked up. I was out there to be crazy and do crazy stuff, and I'm walking around IRL streaming. I thought it would be funny for them to follow me in the bathroom. I didn't think in the moment through da 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 da. I'm sorry. Then I think you can have a more conversation here of what Twitch is doing, how they are not suspending them, what are they doing, blah, blah, blah.
That could still happen. Here's what I would like to see at the very least, is when he's not back on Twitch yet, but when he comes back on Twitch, again, we're talking about Andrew Wilson and apologies earlier. Take a moment, perhaps out of character, to say, I just want to address the recent situation. I acknowledge that I fucked up. I'm really sorry to those that I offended. It was a shocking error of judgment. I really apologize.
It was a dumb thing for me to do.
Let's just have a moment of like, let's just show us sincerely that you learned something. Barrett, do you think that's likely to happen, or do you'll just return completely unrepentant?
He is someone that I could see it going either way, to be honest. And I kind of agree with like, let's sit down, let's talk about this moment that I fucked up. But like, I
just get it out of the way at the top of the show. It takes 2 minutes and then go do the goofy stuff.
Yeah, but because of that, I feel like because he would do that, I feel like he would feel no need to be punished in any other way. Like, again, at the end of the day, it's simple for me of like, the dude broke a fucking law and like nothing is really happening, and like that's the thing that confuses me of like why is that not being treated as a bigger deal than it is. Like,
and that's my thing.
I know it's a goof and people have been replying like, oh, like no harm was done. It's like
it could have been really easily.
It could easily have been much worse.
And like their privacy was breached, and that's just something like I don't know. It fucking frustrates me. That's all I gotta say.
And that's the thing is, I feel, and that's back to the thing of like literally like, well, there's Twitch partner managers, right? We put the logos fucking on Twitch, right? They were like, hey, you fucked up. We're like, oh my God, we're so sorry. We tell the audience, hey, we're sorry. We fucked up. We're stupid. Like, I'm sure that's a conversation that's happening behind the scenes with Doc not being Doc. And
do you think there's been a conversation between him and Twitch about the manner in which he returns?
Oh, no. I don't know. You hope there has, but I don't know. There clearly hasn't. Maybe,
but there must have been some conversation.
I'm sure there was. I was stupid. I didn't know what I was doing.
You tell me, because you're much higher up in the Twitch echelons. At that level of audience and stuff, do you have like a person at Twitch that is like your Twitch
partner manager?
Content?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so they must have had some kind of conversation.
Oh yeah, there's been a conversation. I'm sure about it. Yeah, but I don't think that was like, we'll let you back. We'll do this if you do that kind
but
of thing.
But you need like, I didn't think, but it said like, you need to show contrition. The point, the question that should be his entire. The question is, again, you should never show contrition because somebody tells you to. But a lot of the reasons why you see public figures come out and apologize when they do something terrible, like cheat on their wife or whatever, or they get caught on video doing something horrible, is because their crisis managers have told them that they need to do that. They don't really, they're not sorry. They're only sorry that they got caught, but they have to come out and do this bullshit kind of apology performance. And again, I would like to believe that if Dark were to come back to Twitch and sincerely apologize, that it was in fact sincere, that it wasn't because Twitch or someone told him you need to apologize, but because he honestly fucking, for, for 1 second looked inward and went, I really fucked up. And genuinely regrets and understands that he made a mistake, and then communicate that apology sincerely.
And that's the biggest thing, is just communicating it, that you understand where the transgression was and you're truthfully sorry for it, right? But like you're saying, you look at his, right now I have his Twitch page open, right? His chat's going bonkers with people going in and subbing and chatting
with each other.
Yeah,
there's tons of people. He's not even online, but his Twitch stream is blowing up right now.
And so it's that thing of, that is part of it, where does that audience care about an apology, right? I think it's that same thing of like, no, if your audience doesn't care about it, you're talking to your audience.
In fact, I think there are probably many members of his audience that if you were to apologize, oh, what a pussy or whatever. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And now I'm going to have all the Dr. Disrespect fans fucking flooding my channel, twitch.tv/GaryWitter. giving me shit over it.
Yeah. We'll see.
Anyway, I think we're all kind of agree that let me ask you this, because I asked Barrett as well. I said what I think. What do you think Twitch should have done? What's the appropriate response to what he did?
I mean, breaking a privacy law and breaking a pretty clear TOS, right? I mean, going back to what the reporting here from Vice was, right? Talking about it's unauthorized sharing of private information, sharing content that violates another's reasonable expectation of privacy. For example, streaming in a private space without permission. Yeah, that's the bathroom, right? So he's violated the most thing. For me, it would be I'm taking away your toys until you apologize, until you say something. And then even that, and that's not me like letting you off the hook, blah, 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 blah. I mean, like, do you understand? Like, when you walked in, what were you thinking? I would have a real conversation with one of our biggest streamers. I would, you know what I mean? If I'm the partner manager or Twitch higher up or whoever the fuck it is, I'm going to have a real conversation. I'm like, what the fuck, man? Like, right. What were you thinking? What was the intention here? Why did you do this? What's your plan to message this that you know?
I just come back to what I said earlier about there being no real consequence. We're talking about this now, and it's a guy on Twitch. It's not the end. It's not the beginning of the end of the world or anything, but we do see this writ large on a much more serious level. We see, major international banks laundering money for international drug cartels. We see people crashing the financial system. We see all kinds of outrageous behavior in public life at the upper ends of society. And all these people ever do is get smacked on the wrist with a little bit of a fine. Until people start going to prison for their crimes, they're just going to keep getting away with it. What is a $10 million fine to Facebook for invading privacy? That's money behind between fucking Zuckerberg's couch cushions. It's just a price that they pay to keep on doing what they're doing. And until someone like I'm not necessarily saying that Zuckerberg should be going to prison, but people at the upper end of society who have a tremendous responsibility to the public at large because of the power that they wield, if they abuse that power in a way that is really detrimental to the public and really damaging and dangerous, they should fucking go to prison. But they never will, because the system's all rigged to protect the people at the top, and so they just keep paying their little pocket change fines and go on, and nothing's ever going to change. Yeah. There's not much we can do about that except go out and vote and protest and things like that. But in our little community here in the world of Twitch, where one of the major figures has done something, but I'm glad there's been a big conversation about this. It's standards in streaming and things like that are something we should be talking about.
Sure, I mean, it's bleeding edge right now. We got to figure this stuff out.
One of the biggest streamers on Twitch, a role model for many young streamers, grossly violated both criminal law and Twitch's TOS, and he got a two-week slap on the wrist, and will be back making more money than ever before, because again, it's all about the almighty dollar. He makes a lot of money for Twitch, so they're going to protect this guy. If they're not going to ban him for a year, as I think they should, and lose a year's worth of his revenue, it's never going to happen, because it's all about this, Greg.
Well, yeah, because you go to Mixer.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's the thing.
Right. He'll go someplace else.
You worry about him jumping to something else. That's why I think that.
And they would love to have him.
Well, would they? You don't even know. That one I don't know about. Maybe Microsoft would be like, actually, no, fuck off.
Maybe.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Because Microsoft's doing so much.
So it just goes to YouTube. You can get away with anything on that platform as well.
It's true.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? I think it was the Vice article that talked about the fact that he's put up a recap over on his YouTube channel since then, otherwise being pretty quiet.
Logan Paul filmed a dead body. A man who committed suicide in a forest for fun, and streamed it out to millions of people, and laughed at a man's dead body in a forest. Where's he now? Has he been cancelled? Has he been exiled into shame and ignominy as he should have been? No, he's still on YouTube and he's more popular than ever. There are no consequences, so nothing will change.
Yeah.
Ever.
And that's the thing, is like, back to the believing in the good of people. I'd like to hope that Doc or whoever fucks up next and is a major, major player, does that, right? And comes out and is like, hey, let's have a conversation about what I fucked up and how we fucked up, right? And how we're not going to do that anymore. And we'll see. This is a developing situation. We'll go from here on where it is. But
yeah, we'll see. I the next big story will be what his actual return onto it. Does he address it?
Sure, he'll break a new concurrent. Yeah. That'll be the headline. The next one will be him breaking the
biggest audience on Twitch ever.
Exactly. Number three, 505 Games has provided a statement regarding the current state of Bloodstained Ritual of the Night on the Nintendo Switch. If you remember yesterday, it came out. I read it in the thing and I was like, I've heard it's not running well. Here's what we got from 505 Games. Hey everyone, we've been listening to your feedback regarding Switch performance. Our goal is for everyone, regardless of platform, to be able to enjoy the game and have it run smoothly. We want to live up to your and our expectations. Throughout the QA process, we have been addressing performance issues in the game. Update 1.1 was published to Switch prior to launch to add content and improve performance. It did not accomplish as much as we had hoped for, and we need to do more. To address the concerns brought up by the community, we are immediately shifting resources to improve performance and stability for the Switch. You can expect a number of small updates that will improve different areas of the game rather than waiting longer for one big update. We will have more details as we dive into the work. We thank you for your patience and apologize for the inconvenience. Good. Again, it would have been awesome if the game, I'm sure they knew the game wasn't running well when they launched it.
I've been watching a little bit of this game, Bloodstained, because a lot of people on Twitch are streaming it right now. It's a popular game among streamers. It looks great. You know, obviously, it's going to scratch that Castlevania itch, right? It's very much a Castlevania game. Seems very, very heavily based on, I think, probably Symphony of the Night is probably the closest game to it.
Yeah.
It looks really good. I'm actually kind of surprised that it's not performing well on Switch, because it doesn't look to me like a tremendously performance heavy game. It's that kind of quasi 2D 3D platformer kind of thing. Yeah. And we are used to, on if you buy a game on Switch, if you get like Diablo 3 or something on Switch, you know that you're probably not going to get as much raw performance as you would on a PS4 or an Xbox or a PC or whatever, because we know that it's not the most powerful console. But most of the time, even like something like Doom, The narrative coming out of the Switch ports has been, actually, it's pretty good. Like, you can tell it's not as good, but it's surprisingly good for the Switch. So I'm actually kind of surprised to be hearing about performance issues on a game for the Switch, which doesn't really seem like a particularly performance-heavy game. But, you know, what do I know about the tech behind the game?
It just sucks for a game that's been that long in development, and I saw people tweeting about it last night. I want to say Kyle Orland, but I probably shouldn't say name because I don't remember. But basically being like, this sucks because I was holding out for the Switch version. Right, that's why I haven't played the other versions yet.
Well, hopefully they'll get there. I mean, it seems like they recognize there's a problem, which is the first step, and they're working to fix it.
And that's the thing. Again, I'm sure you know launching this game, it's not running the way you want it to launch, even though they do talk about update 1.1 was published to the Switch prior to launch to add content and improve performance. It did not accomplish as much as we had hoped for. That maybe they were expecting that to do more for some reason, and I don't understand game development. So again, to everything we're talking today of messaging,
is good messaging.
The game launched and it wasn't great, and the next day, or not even the day of, I got this yesterday in my email, and it was like, hey, yeah, we're working on it and we're not going to hold for one big update. We're going to do a bunch of little ones. We're working on it. That's what you want. You want a responsive thing. Hopefully, you have a game in a week that's running better.
Yeah, it feels like a particularly important platform to get it right for, because Castlevania started as a Nintendo franchise, right? Started on the NES. Even though this isn't an official Castlevania game, it does have very strong links to the Castlevania franchise. The Castlevania franchise is linked very strongly to the Nintendo platforms. So, I want this game to work well on Nintendo.
Me too. Number four on the Roper Report. This is going to be a shorter one. Glenn Schofield, you remember him from Visceral, where he was one of the creators of Dead Space, then went to Sledgehammer with Michael Condry and worked on Call of Duty, has joined the PUBG Corp. This is from his Twitter. Glenn writes, big news! I am proud and honored to announce that I am now part of PUBG Corporation. Working together, we are building a AAA studio called Striking Distance in San Ramon, California. Then PUBG put out a giant thing. If you don't know who Glenn is, a proven leader in the industry, a proven leader and industry luminary with more than 28 years of experience, Glenn was instrumental in the creation of the Dead Space franchise, and more recently helped shape the lead development of the blockbuster Call of Duty franchise. So, congrats to Glenn, someone who's been a supporter of Greg Miller Works for a long time, ever since coming on Up at Noon. So good for him.
PUBG are making some big moves. They make so much money on that mobile version of PUBG. I think that's where the most of their money comes from.
Yeah.
Obviously Brendan is now off in doing Amsterdam his thing, working on his special projects. And now they've got a whole new studio. So PUBG is growing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it would be interesting to see I think that was remember when they spun off and started PUBG Corporation, right? It was like a weird, like, for one game, and then, okay, cool, now it's PUBG. Now it's PUBG Mobile. Now it's whatever Player Unknown is working on himself. And now Glenn's making a AAA game studio. Like, yeah, okay, take that money you're making and reinvest it and put out more stuff. Awesome. Number five, this is a longer one, but an interesting one. Ubisoft watches your subtitles, if you didn't know. Brendan Sinclair over at GamesIndustry.biz has this. Sometimes gamers want things spelled out for them. That's one takeaway from a handful of stats released yesterday by Ubisoft Accessibility Project Manager David Tisserand. And I know I'm butchering that. That is a very French name, and I'm sorry, Jen. In a Twitter thread about player behavior as it relates to subtitle features. David began by noting that 2017...
By the way, it's probably David.
Well, I'm saying David because I'm here in America, right, Kevin?
America!
David began by noting that 2017's Assassin's Creed Origins had subtitles off by default, but Ubisoft found that more than 60% of players eventually went into the option screen to turn them on. He then gives subtitle usage stats for a pair of games released after Origins, Odyssey and Far Cry New Dawn, both of which shipped with subtitles on by default. In the most direct comparison, Odyssey, only about 5% of players entered the options to turn subtitles off. For Far Cry New Dawn, it was even less common, with about 3% going out of their way to turn them off. However, Ubisoft hasn't switched to opt-out subtitles across the board. Earlier this year, The Division 2 shipped with subtitles off by default, and David said 75% of players turned them on at least once. About half of all Division 2 players continue to play with subtitles on. Quote, subtitles matter to everyone, David said. We hope it helps spreading best practices throughout the industry. Something you don't think about, right?
I actually do think about this.
Yeah, tell me about
My wife plays Assassin's Creed Odyssey with the subtitles on. She plays most games she plays with this. I don't, because I feel like reading the subtitles kind of takes me out of the game a little bit.
Yeah.
But when you have kids... Mm-hmm. My wife has tried to watch like an important cutscene, and then my kid comes crashing into the room going,
look at this,
and she missed like the important part of the story. And you know, you can't, with cutscenes, you can't rewind. Nah, right? Yeah. I wish you could. You should be able to rewind cutscenes.
Share button.
Okay, fair
Hit
enough.
The share button, save the video, go watch it again.
Why can't you just like scrub back a little bit, scrub back 30 sure, seconds yeah. or whatever? But my wife has subtitles on in the game because sometimes if she can't hear it because like I come crashing into the room going, oh, Leah, where's my laptop or
Can't
whatever.
Find my trousers.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Make me a shirt for my Twitch channel. she misses it. So she leaves the subtitles on. So it's not just for the hard of hearing. Subtitles,
oh, no, totally. 100%. That's what... It's the most interesting thing of I think it's interesting to see Ubisoft talking about this because accessibility is such a big thing for them. Of course, Steve Saylor, the blind gamer, has talked about it before that he's gone up there and worked with Ubisoft north of the border up there in Canada to have a panel of, hey, how can we make games more accessible? What do we need to do? And I mean, again, from a place of privilege, and maybe not Steve, but something before then, it wasn't even I wasn't even thinking of. Oh, what's it like for a hearing impaired person, a deaf person to play a video game, right? It was more of a how I use them of, yeah, someone's talking, I'm playing with the sound down, I'm on a handheld, like that's why I'm using subtitles, right? Even Mary Jen, when we started watching movies together, she's like, all right, can we put the subtitles on? Because this is my second language and okay, yeah, sure. Like the way people use things in such different respects, I appreciate that Ubisoft is looking into this on that level of it, right?
No, I like that.
People need it, they want it, and we'll give it to them.
I think a lot of games actually have subtitles on by default.
Yeah, yeah.
You go, if you don't want them, to go in the menu and turn them off. But the default mode is to have them on.
Gary?
Yes.
I'm excited to see how subtitles work in Watch Dogs Legions, but that game's still so far away. If I wanted to know what was coming to the mom and grop shops today, where would I go?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
I'm Greg Miller, and I'm going to tell you what is out today. I don't believe... It's one of those, did I click on it, and it's just a slow, slow, slow Wednesday, or did I not? So I'm clicking
on... There's almost nothing going on.
I remember, I just steal these from Kotaku like I steal usually. No, it's just one. Okay. So Team Fight Tactics is available now. That's the one from Riot. That's not League, their new thing. And then Victorian Mysteries Woman in White is on PC.
Wait, Riot has a new game out?
Yeah, Team Fight Tactics.
Why isn't that a huge deal? I haven't heard about that.
Because it's Team Fight Tactics.
Is it just like a little thing or something?
Yeah, somebody wrote in one of the questions. Here, I can get you the full release. You read the new dates for me, and I'll tell you.
New dates. Division 2 Agents. Tomorrow's maintenance has been postponed to 3 p.m. Central.
It's not
time,
so easy, huh?
Whatever that is. Oh no, that's like Central European time, maybe. 6 o'clock, 6 a.m. PDT. That's the time zone that we're in. 6 a.m. Pacific. The forums have been updated to reflect the change. Night call. a neo-noir narrative investigation game created by the talented folks at Monkey Moon and Black Muffin and published by Raw Fury, is headed to Steam and Xbox Game Pass for PC on July 17th and console later in the year. Tiny Metal Full Metal Rumble deploys on Switch PC July 11th, and the next ID at Xbox Game Pass Showcase is just around the corner. Tune in Thursday, June 27th at 9 a.m. Pacific on the Xbox YouTube channel to hear about great games coming to Xbox Game Pass from independent developers. In this second showcase, you'll get much more announcements and looks at gameplay from titles we showed at E3 2019, such as Star Renegades, Dead Static Drive, and Unto the End. We also caught up with some of the developers who are excited to share more about their games with you. This includes Bloober Team on Blair Witch, Thunder Lotus Games on Spiritfarer, and more.
So here you go. I was actually mistaken on what Teamfight Tactics is, even though it's kind of standalone. Stick with me. Teamfight Tactics, available now. The highly anticipated League of Legends mode is now live
in beta for
North American players. We are pleased to announce that as part of Riot Games' global rollout of the new Teamfight Tactics mode for League of Legends, TFT is now available and playable for players in North American region. Although a mode of League of Legends, TFT is accessible to newcomers and League veterans alike. It is free to sign up for, free to download, free to play, and does not require a minimum League of Legends player level to enjoy. Players creating brand new accounts are able to jump directly into Teamfight Tactics. So it's a mode, but it's kind of its own thing too. In TFT, 8 opponents or friends battle one another in a free-for-all war for supremacy. Players win by strategically selecting the best combination of champions from a randomized pool, upgrading their forces with items, and structuring winning battle formations. Riot's take on the emerging auto-battler genre aims to give all types of players from the diehard competitor to the casual and social player a fun and deep play experience. There you go, PC dorks.
All right.
Deals of the day for you. The PlayStation Plus games for July have been announced. It's Pro Evolution Soccer 2019 and Horizon Chase Turbo. Oof. Okay.
All right.
There you go, PlayStation Plus.
That feels a bit thin on the ground.
Do you usually
get more than that with PS Plus?
Well, no, because they did away a couple months ago, right, with PS3 and Vita games.
Okay.
Now, you'd say, right,
Throw VR in there.
As someone hosting a PlayStation VR show with Big Cav Dog, why don't we start tossing toss one PlayStation VR title in there.
Come on, you right. Coward.
You can't come up with 12 VR titles.
Support your platform. Get behind the platform.
At the end of the year, people are going to be like, oh, man, I got 12 of these things. Maybe I should buy the bundle with the moss in it because it's great. I digress. Time for reader mail, but first, the sponsors. Today we're brought to you by Third Love. Let's get you a better bra, people. Jen, Gia, and more of the kind of honeys love their Third Love bra, and you will too. Third Love uses data points generated by millions of women who have taken their Fit Finder quiz to design bras with breast size and shape in mind for a perfect fit and premium feel. Third Love offers more than 70 sizes, including their signature half cup sizes. You can skip the trip and find your fit with Third Love's online fit finder. Order and try on at home. No more awkward fitting room experiences. Every customer has 6 days to wear it, wash it, and put it to the test. And if you don't love it, return it, and Third Love will wash it and donate it to a woman in need. Third Love's team of expert fit stylists are dedicated to helping you find your perfect fit. Fit stylists are available every day to help via text, chat, or phone. Returns and exchanges are free and easy. This is hands down the most comfortable bra you'll own, with straps that don't slip and tagless labels, so there's no itching. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they're offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/games now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/games for 15% off today. Then second sponsor is Experian. You know, the better your credit score, the easier it is to get the stuff you want, or the less you have to pay. So the question is, why is it so hard to raise your score? Now it won't be, thanks to Experian. They've launched Experian Boost, a brand new way to instantly increase your credit scores for free. For the first time ever, paying your utilities and cell phone can instantly improve your credit score. Experian Boost works by giving credit for the bills you're already paying through your bank account, like water, gas, electric, cable, and cell phone. A higher credit score can help you establish a great credit and get access to credit and preferred rates for the things you need in life. Experian is on a mission to boost America's credit score, which will help millions of people across the country build and get better access to credit. People all across America have already raised their credit scores with Experian Boost, and you should too. It used to take months to see your score go up a point or two. I know this, Gary, because it turned out 2 years ago, one of my credit cards that I thought was closed, I had closed, all of a sudden got dinged years ago, and I didn't pay any attention, and then I tried to use my credit, and that was a big problem for me.
Oh, wow.
And it took forever to build it back up.
Affected your credit score?
Exactly. So this is a great idea. We can't believe it's taking this long for someone to do this. What are you waiting for? Experian Boost can potentially help you establish or increase your access to credit. Boost your FICO score instantly for free. Boost is only available at Experian.com/KF Games. That's Experian.com/KF Games. Games, games, games. Gary, what question do I want to get to you? You know what I mean?
I don't know. What do you got? What are your choices? You got a bunch of them here.
I like to... Variety's the spice of life, as they say. I like to come in with a bunch of different stuff. You know, we're, again, talking about you being an up-and-comer Twitch creator here. Twitch.tv/GaryWitta. Ryan writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, "Hi, Greg and Gary. I really hope you read this question. I'm interested to hear your thoughts, especially from Gary. Are algorithms the reason for streamer exhaustion? And do Twitch and YouTube owe streamers a duty of care? I'm no streaming expert, but I believe to maintain traffic and subscriptions, it is important to stream regularly and for extended periods. If this is the case, should Twitch/YouTube build in options for content creators to take a break or risk them being burnt out? Thanks, Ryan, in Shropshire, England." Now, again, you're a pillar of the Twitch community.
Yes, a leading light, one might say.
Do you think it's algorithms that are motivating people and having them burn out, or something else?
I don't know. I don't know enough about the algorithms to say. Who knows? It's all kind of, you know, back-end voodoo that's sure. going on. I do think that you know, obviously one of the many metrics that Twitch and YouTube reward is how often and how much do you stream. If you stream like in high volume, I'm sure that the algorithm favors you in at least one aspect.
Sure.
So there are a lot of people, and I see this a lot. And I'm on that grind. They say now that's what the young people say. I'm all about that grind.
You have to start saying it too if you want to be
paid. Start grinding,
yeah.
And I guess that means it's like putting in the hours. And yeah, if you're a Twitch streamer, if you're a YouTube person by profession, then yeah, you got to put in the hours, you got to put in the work. But don't overdo it. I saw a tweet that quite annoyed me the other day. It was a Twitch streamer that said, "I made an open offer to the Twitch community for a $500 reward for anyone who is willing to do a 48-hour stream, because it's all about that grind, and no one's taking me up on it." Really, dude, you're surprised that no one took you up on that?
Yeah.
$500 for 48 hours of uninterrupted work? That's barely more than the California minimum wage. And you know, this is not healthy. We keep talking about work-life balance. We keep talking about not killing
crunch,
yourself.
Right?
And I get it. I understand that the anxiety that a lot of Twitch and YouTube streamers must face. If I'm not putting out that content every single day, my audience is fickle and they might just go somewhere else. Yeah. I've got to stay on it. I've got to keep ahead of it.
And that for me is more why you see people burn out.
Right.
It's not the. I mean, obviously, and again, like you're talking about. And I'm not the guy. If Tim came in here, he'd beautiful mind stuff on the wall about algorithms and watch times and how that all works. I know that YouTube wants watch time, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, he understands all that stuff?
To an extent.
Okay.
Or he acts like he does, and that's why I have to keep him around. I'm like, all right. I think it's way more the idea that, no, the grind is what it is. And if I'm not streaming every day, if I'm not streaming for 8 hours, they will go somewhere else. They will find somebody else. Keep in mind, like when we read subs at the end of every show here on Twitch, and it's like, Amazon Prime's a free subscription to give away to who you see fit, right? If I'm not there when your Amazon Prime goes up for renewal and you have it again, like Kind of Funny isn't there, or you're not paying it,
yeah.
Why, what's to keep you from giving it to somebody else? And it's not like you shouldn't give it to other people, but it is that thing. If that's your lifeline, your livelihood, if you are, there's so many people who are only Twitch streamers, right? Kind of Funny, when we started this company, our idea was let's be a stool with a million different legs. Where, like, if one ever gets swept out, if tomorrow we got banned from Twitch because we showed two cartoons fucking, if that happened again, okay, that would suck and we would lose that revenue, but we still have other legs supporting the company and what we're
right.
building. Whereas, like, there's so many people who know that's all I do and then I put my stuff up on YouTube and it doesn't go anywhere and I don't have a Twitter following or blah, blah, blah. That, I think it's that competition that leads to burnout. It's that idea that you're trying to be there and do this thing and ignore all these different things. And I don't know how to balance that and how to fix that. Like, that is up to the streamer to figure out and the business model they want and the audience they have and all these different things.
But you guys aren't in risk of burning out, right? You guys put out like a sensible amount of content every day. There's plenty of content on Kind of Funny. You guys produce loads of content, but you're not in here like, I mean, I know you guys work really hard, but it's not like you're in here like 24 hours a day, like fucking killing yourselves to constantly, you know, make content like in high volume. You guys focus, I think, on quality. Poor Kevin. Kevin does. Kevin is the unsung hero.
But that's
here.
The reason we would never say we're Twitch people. We're not
right.
Twitch. We're Twitch
right.
streamers, sure, but like it's not our revenue model, right?
Right.
Like I think you and Andy are already the more traditional streamers, I think. Yeah. Andy's more than you even. Andy's the traditional Twitch streamer, right? Like, he goes home and he plays games and that's what he does. Like, I go home and I play games quietly by myself. Right. Whereas, like, we run this as a business and use Twitch as a way to window our content and get it to a new audience and we find new people.
Right.
And then there's the occasional thing where we pop over and stream a game. But yeah, we're in a different way and we're not running that way. But we're definitely burning the candle at both ends. You know, we're working on stuff when we go home. Kevin's staying late. Like, obviously, I'm running around hosting stuff on the weekends. We're going to conventions and stuff like that.
Right.
It's a different kind of thing, but it's a more traditional. Like, we've always talked about it, right? We straddle that line between being influencers and traditional press. And I think the fact that we have an IGN pedigree makes us way more in line with what an IGN does.
Right, right.
Gary, I want to jump to something called required reading. If you didn't know, it's a segment we do here on the show where we find articles that are about video games that you should read. Over on Kotaku, one Jason Schreier has an article called The Human Cost of Call of Duty Black Ops 4. And it is a fascinating read, Gary Whitta. Have you read it?
I read it this morning. It enraged me.
Oh my gosh.
It was another reason why I was glad to come in today, because I did want to talk about it.
Let me give him a taste of it, right?
Sure.
So it starts from a very interesting perspective where obviously it's talking about crunch, bad working conditions, too many hours, all these different things. But it starts from the tester's perspective, which you don't hear often, right? Testers are the people who are just like, meh.
Like Kevin, the unsung heroes behind the scenes.
Yeah, exactly. I want to jump in this, though, because it chronicles Black Ops 4. And at one point, I had to stop, and I'm like, this is the game that... Okay, yeah, because they're talking about how fucking crazy the development of Black Ops 4 was, right? I'm going to jump into Jason. Basically, they went into winter break at the end of 2017, going into 2018, gave them a demo because this game was supposed to be a 2v2 campaign. Everybody liked it. They said at the holiday party, then they come back. After that break, however, the mood started to shift. Over the first few weeks of 2018, Treyarch's leadership began informing groups of employees that they were cutting the program. There were technical concerns, timing issues, and according to one person who was there, negative feedback from playtesters who felt like the gameplay was too repetitive. So they decided to pivot. They take all the work they had put into the 2v2 campaign and morph it into a traditional single-player story. Quote, the idea was, what if we spruce it up, put more explosions in, set pieces, said one Treyarch staffer. Then maybe people will get that classic Call of Duty feel from it. But there wasn't much time left. They'd originally scheduled for a Black Ops 4 to release in November, as was traditional for Call of Duty games, but Rockstar put a wrench in that one, bumping the highly anticipated Western Red Dead Redemption 2 from spring 2018 to October 26th. To try to preempt the cowboy game, Activision decided to shift Black Ops 4 forward to October 12th, which meant Treyarch's developers had one fewer month than they thought. Quote, people were saying, how can we do this? Create an entirely new campaign that takes everything we've put into this other mode that was unsuccessful and still tells our story, said one person who worked there. After a few weeks, it became clear that developing a brand new campaign wasn't practical. Quote, everyone realizes at this point, this is absurd. This is impossible. So they made the second scope change, this time eliminating the campaign entirely, which left Black Ops 4 with two main components, traditional player versus player multiplayer and the supernatural zombie mode, in which players can gun down hordes of the undead. Call of Duty fans would expect more than just those two modes, so Treyarch's leadership had to come up with something else. As it turned out, many of the staff had been playing a lot of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, the mega-popular Battle Royale game that had launched in 2017, and Fortnite's free take on the game had just morphed into a cultural phenomenon. Why not do a Call of Duty-themed Battle Royale? That's with single digit months on the line, which suddenly clicks into so much sense of when I was there for pre-E3 Judges Week last year, sitting in that campaign and they showed multiplayer, they talked about stuff, and then they just like had a teaser trailer of shit for Blackout. And it was like, why are we not seeing Blackout? That's the coolest thing. That's what I want to play. Because it was being baked in the oven.
That's literally all they had was that teaser.
Sure. Great, fascinating article. Everyone should check out.
Great article. Jason Schreier continues to kill it. Jason, of course, wrote the big Anthem expose not long ago, and this kind of feels like the next big behind the curtain story from Jason about Black Ops. All of the stuff that you just read out about the game being kind of rejiggered and throwing in Battle Royale at the last minute, none of that really surprises me. I mean, this is just the kind of the haphazard way that games are developed these days. Again, shades of Anthem. You know, Anthem, they kept reinventing and changing, and no one ever really knew what the game was until the last minute. So that's all, you know, kind of par for the course at this point. None of that's what actually enraged me. What enraged me was the very granular detail that Jason went into about just how poorly the testers are treated. treated, not just at Treyarch, but you know, the theme in the piece was this is how they're treated at Treyarch, but like the general feeling is like this is how testers everywhere.
Well, the general theme is that you know testers are always like the people lowest people on the totem pole. You go there, bootstrap yourself up, nobody cares about you.
And I'll say
that Treyarch is like especially bad. Or this Call of Duty.
I mean, and so we're going to go into a couple of details about why it's especially bad right now. Testers, game testers. May very well not be as skilled as game programmers and game developers, but they work as hard as anyone else. If you think about it, everyone goes, oh, what, how great. Remember there was a whole contest like on TV years ago?
PlayStation.
Were you a judge on that or something?
I was, yeah.
To
yeah.
be a game tester, like that's yeah. some kind of dream job.
Brent I guarantee Yoki, you being Adrian a Curry, Gregman.
It is the first rung on the ladder potentially into game development, but I guarantee you right now, a game tester is not a dream job. It's much closer to a nightmare job. Sitting there for 12 hours a day and often longer, day after day after day, playing buggy and broken builds of a game in development and not even playing it for fun, but like trying to find ways to break it and exploit it and trying to find the bugs. I guarantee you that is very, very quickly that becomes really, really boring, chore-like, unpleasant work. You don't want to do it. It's really, really hard work. They work as hard as anyone else, but they get treated, and this is the point of Jason's argument, very much like second-class citizens.
Yeah.
There's a whole thing about how they have to like park 10 minutes away from, you know.
The food that's provided for developers for lunches. Like
so we're going to get to that. So trust me.
Gary, don't ruin the whole article. It's required reading.
No, I'm building up to something here.
Okay.
Look, not everyone,
I'll let you go.
I get it. Look, there's a hierarchy, right? Not everyone can have a primo parking spot. Some people have got to park further away, and that's usually done by like the head of the studio and stuff. He gets the primo parking spot. The testers are in the lot across the street or whatever. I get that. That's just how it has to be. But there's other things that seem like just wholly unnecessary. This just struck me as like cruel. That detail about when they have food catered for the developers that are working on crunch, or like breakfast or lunch is brought in, or whatever. There was this whole thing that Jason talked about how the testers were told you're not allowed to go near that food until all the actual game developers have eaten. Right, it's like for at least an hour you're not allowed to touch the food. So they're literally asking these game testers who are probably hungry, would love something to eat because they're working all day and don't even get a lunch break, have to stare at this food while the game and they've been forbidden to go near it for at least an hour, and perhaps sometimes they said don't touch it at all. That to me is disgraceful. Now couple that with the other detail that was in the story about I forget the name of the guy, but the chief financial officer of Activision had an extraordinarily profitable financial year. Financial officer of Activision last year got a $15 million bonus. $15 million. Meanwhile, the people that test his games and are a big part of him being rich are being told that they have to wait an hour to eat when they're hungry.
The part where they're working 24 hours, right? Where it's 10 to 10, and then another group comes in 10 to 10, right? But they at night, the air conditioning turns off, and they had to like write a million different emails till somebody found it.
Right, and they're literally sweating through their clothes because the AC doesn't run at night.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Let me pitch you a radical idea.
Sure.
And I don't want to go like down a whole Bernie Sanders socialism road here, but let me pitch you a radical idea. What if, imagine this scenario, Greg, instead of the chief financial officer of Activision being paid a $15 million bonus, what if he was paid a $14,999,900 bonus and the remaining $100 went so that the testers could have some fucking pizza at the same time as everyone else? Would that be such a hardship for Mr. $15 million?
I don't think so, Gary.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
And then these human beings actually get to eat at the same time as everyone else and don't have to sit around the game office like fucking Oliver Twist watching game developers eat while they go hungry. It's outrageous. It's disgraceful. I see Barrett nodding over there. He agrees with me.
Please, sir, can I have another?
Right? Exactly.
I agree. It's a great it's a great terrifying, horrifying read or whatever.
Yeah.
But again, this is what we're talking about. And again,
I really applaud Jason for shining a light on this, because we should be talking about it more.
And that's what I'm talking about, right? And people, I know that it's come up before. Oh, the crunch conversation is a lot like how it was with loot boxes. Is like how, like, you know, the reoccurring themes that you see in the Games Daily show, because it's daily. You hope, like I was talking about in the beginning of the show, right? That talking about this and seeing it over and over again right now in the very micro, you know, when you get to the macro, is going to change and we'll see stuff.
Right.
Who knows, though? Everybody head to Kotaku. Check it out. It's a good piece. Gary, we asked people watching live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames to go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong.
I wonder what we got wrong. What did we get wrong?
Arkwing says, E3 does not allow people under 17 to attend, so no kids would have been in the bathroom. However, it is very wrong that Dr. Disrespect was streaming in the bathroom.
It showed live on Twitch.
Under 17? Well, you can be 17. You're still legally a child.
What do you got for me? Is his mic up?
On the Twitch stream, it was shown that there was a child in there. So I don't know what their argument is.
I that's what I heard. Never watched the footage. I knew you knew more. That's why I'm glad you're back in here. An anabiologist says there's no updates from Mr. Deadmoth. From as far as it was reported, he was resuspended. It looks like it might be a permaban. Kebab says some games have given the option to restart cutscenes. Kingdom Hearts made it mandatory after dying, of course. Kebab says Horizon Zero Chase is actually a great game, Greg. Talk to Tim about it. That's not the argument. I'm just saying, like, neither of those games are, like, huge AAA or even, like, whatever. Like, a, whatever. Yes, I'm sure it's a fine game. I'm sure if you like soccer, Pez is fine. Get out of here. This is America, though, right, Kevin?
Tell him.
Nanobiologist says the $500 for 48 stream is actually less than minimum wage. California current minimum wage is $12. This 48 comes in at $10.42.
Oh, no, that's right. It's actually barely more than it's barely more than the federal minimum wage, which is actually lower than the California minimum wage. So it's actually worse than the way I explained it.
People. Ladies and gentlemen. This has been Kind of Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can watch us do this show live, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, and of course, listen on podcast services around the globe. You can also watch on Rooster Teeth, all that stuff. Gary's family is here.
Do you want to come on and show your snow leopard? Come on.
Now, this is interesting, because you're going to show this snow leopard that your daughter has, right?
Yeah.
And if you want...
Come on.
Of course,
let's see.
This snow leopard, heartwarming, because... Your daughter said, don't throw me an expensive birthday party. Let's adopt a snow leopard.
Her birthday is coming up, and we said, do you want a birthday party? And she said, instead of spending money on a birthday party, I want to adopt an animal at the zoo. So we adopted a snow leopard, and she got this little snow leopard plushie. What's her name?
Spot.
Spot the snow leopard.
Very nice.
So she's a total sweetheart, and she would rather adopt an animal in need than have an extravagant birthday party for herself. So I'm very proud of her. And?
Twins.
You got what?
Twins.
What do you mean, twins?
Twin snow leopards.
Where's the other one?
The one that she adopted.
Oh, right, the real one and the plushy one.
Oh.
That's right.
That's a picture of twins, so that's where the money goes.
Adorable. You're doing something right, Gary. Because you, terrible person.
I mean, I'm a lost cause, but kids there is still person. Hope for the next generation.
Ladies and gentlemen, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.